and welcome to The Right Idea, where we discuss the people, policy, and politics that drive Texas. I'm Brian Phillips. I'm the Chief Communications Officer at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. And with me, as always, is my co-host, our Vice President of Research, Derek Cohen. Derek, we are right at the beginning of South by Southwest here. Are you going out and doing anything that's fun this week?
Absolutely not. No, no.
I'm spoken like a true Austinite.
That's one of the badge of honors, doing that and then complaining about Austin City Limits Festival. But yeah, I think that you need to look no further than traffic on Friday to just realize maybe it's...
We'll just get out as soon as we can.
Exactly.
Yeah, rent out your apartment or whatever.
Yeah, stay away from the city center.
Well, this is a special edition of The Right Idea, and it's special because we have a guest who happens to be in town this week, and so we decided we'd take this opportunity to do a special edition. Adam Andjevsky, I said it right like 100 times until I finally get
you
on
nailed
camera.
Nailed it, Brian.
Adam Andjevsky is the CEO and founder of OpenTheBooks.com, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, what that is, but just very quickly for our audience, OpenTheBooks.com is the largest private repository of U.S. public sector spending. So let's jump into that and figure out what that is. But as the marketing guy, the comms guy, I love your tagline, every dime online in real time, right? And so let's talk a little bit about that. First, Adam, thanks for being on the show. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for hosting me.
And for you, are you going to jump out and do some South by stuff? I know you didn't come in.
No.
I'm getting out of here.
I'm going to Houston to the rodeo.
Okay, well, even better. All right, good deal.
Tomorrow I address the downtown Houston Rotary Club, so I'm looking forward to that.
That's awesome.
For lunch.
Well, that's good. Yeah, definitely. You know, as a conservative, as much as I would like to, you know, jump in and be part of that, I just don't feel like it's our people necessarily for some of that. So maybe it's better that you head down to Houston, go to the rodeo. It seems like more folks down there. But let's jump in. OpenTheBooks.com. I've heard about it for decades. I mean, it's been around for a long time. Having just been in Congress, and of course, you know, it's a good accountability, transparency tool and all of that. Why don't you tell our viewers and our listeners exactly what OpenTheBooks.com is?
Well, we believe that transparency revolutionizes United States public policy and politics. So to that end, last year, we filed 55,000 Freedom of Information Act requests, and we captured nearly every dime taxed and spent at every level of government, federal, state, and local across the entire country. So if you want to know, like, for instance, how much the fifth grade teacher of your children makes, we have that in our database. We've got all 25 million public employees' salaries, again, federal, state, and local, everywhere. If you have administrator of a mosquito abatement district, we have their salary in our database. So over the course of the last 5 years, we've prosecuted 250,000 Freedom of Information Act requests. Mm-hmm. And for the first time in American history, we have nearly, not quite, but nearly every dime taxed and spent at every level. And we do this so people can follow the money, so you can hold the political class accountable for the spending of your tax dollar.
Now, before we dive into what exactly is in the database, let me just ask, because we do Freedom of Information Acts all the time, or Freedom of Information, what is it, PIA requests, I think, in Texas,
right.
Public Information Act requests. And I mean, some of them can take years.
Right.
And then even when you finally get an answer back in 6 months, they've redacted everything. Or then they say, oh, well, you didn't exactly specify what you were looking for, so we don't have any of that information, and you've got to start all over. How do you do that where you're actually getting the request back and getting that kind of information so that you have this treasure trove of transparency?
Yeah, we demand transparency, but so prong one is data capture. We file these requests. Prong two is we actually give those requests oversight. We give the data oversight ourselves. So we open the books. We audit the books. The audits make national news. We'll talk about some of those things. But prong three is very critical. Right to your question, it's litigation, inflection point lawsuits to keep transparency law wide. So, you know, for instance, on state checkbooks, it was a knockdown, dragout dogfight over the course of a decade to open the line-by-line spending in California.
Oh, I bet. Mm.
Now, after we did that, we wanted to answer the burning question whether Governor Gavin Newsom participated in the highly unethical practice of soliciting state vendors for campaign donations. So once we had assembled one full year of the California line-by-line spending, we ran his campaign donor disclosures through that. Mm. Here's what we found. We found he solicited 1,000 companies. He received $10.6 million worth of campaign donations, which was significant. In August of 2022, that was 40% of all his cash on hand came from state vendors. And those vendors, those 1,000 vendors, received in 1 year, $6.2 billion in state payments. So look, in God we trust, California politicians, we must audit.
Well, that's an amazing story. I mean, I remember being in Congress, and they used to have advertised this. Like, the lobbyists used to advertise that kind of thing where they would say, you know, if you pay us, you know, X amount of dollars, we'll go and lobby and get back 10X or 100X of what you pay us to go, and we'll go to the taxpayer and get that amount of money. They don't do that as much anymore because now that's seen as a corrupt practice, but it seems like you guys are able to dig in and really find those kinds of numbers.
There's so many ways. Once you assemble this database, it's a treasure trove of data, and there's so many ways to match it up with other databases to bring about good public policy reforms. Now, in California, it's entirely legal. Pay to play is legal in California. We prove that, but I think most voters, most people would feel that it is highly unethical. Mm-hmm.
Derek, so what do you think about Texas? Like, in terms of its transparency, I know Open the Books and Adam, they do a lot of work here in Texas, or at least keep an eye on it just as much as they do a lot of other states. But we've had some transparency reforms in the past couple of sessions. I'm not sure how much of them went anywhere or if they're actually being executed. One of those things.
Well, yeah. Well, first of all, I want to state for the record, and make sure you're recording this, next time James Quintero gripes about having to do a PIA request, I'm going to drop those numbers on him and say, look, it can get a lot harder, James. But yeah, no, you mentioned the reform efforts here in Texas, and I think Texas has a good soft inclination towards transparency, especially in kind of more proactive public disclosures. I would point to our comptroller's office, who's been dogged in just getting answering the question on local debt. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's the ISDs, special purpose districts, any sort of sub municipality, whatever the case might be. But still, there is, to your point, there tends to be that resistance as well. One of the things that we're working on is, you know, post SB 17. We were concerned with how some of these places were structuring their DEI departments, these places being universities. And by routing communications through some of the university's GC offices, they said, oh, it is now per se privileged information, therefore it's non-disclosable. Well, as long as you have a lawyer on an email thread, then that, you know, that's all. I don't know about where everyone else works, but here that would be pretty hard to get through something without a lawyer on an email thread,
right?
The amount of JDs we have around here. But all that to illustrate that there is a public acceptance of the need for transparency. Mm-hmm. There are still hangups like that I think could be addressed legislatively.
Yeah, go ahead.
So one of the things, when you bring up diversity, equity, inclusion, staffers within higher ed in Texas and across the country, this is one area that our database can shed a lot of sunshine on. For example, we have basically the entire public higher ed salary complex for the last 7 years in our database. So we just did a national story. It was retweeted by Elon Musk, of all people, Daily Mail, Jesse Waters, Fox News,
right?
You know,
Texas.
Here we'll talk about it, which I really appreciate the platform here at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Obviously, last Friday, the University of Florida, because of the DeSantis rule that no public funds could be involved in DEI programming, the University of Florida terminated 28 staffers and saved $5 million. Mm-hmm. So we were holding the study on the University of Virginia. The University of Virginia is important. Not only is it a flagship university in the state, but it was also founded by Thomas Jefferson. Mm-hmm. And Thomas Jefferson obviously co-authored the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. All men are created equal. Mm-hmm. You know, you have equal opportunity.
Right.
There's not, you know, everybody doesn't achieve the same outcome. Like equity, you have the opportunity to make something of your life. Well, we showed that the University of Virginia doesn't have 28 staffers. They've got 235 staffers. They spend $20 million a year on their payroll, and they've moved in the opposite direction on a philosophical point away from Jeffersonian principles and embraced the quotas of the neo-Marxist crowd on DEI.
The absolute irony of that being Mr. Jefferson's university and moving that direction. We here in Texas have the problem of, you know, and I'd love to tap into the database to see if we can find those numbers for our DEI offices. But we, as Derek alluded to, SB 17, we outlaw DEI programs at public universities and colleges. But then they just switch, they start switching the names.
Right.
And instead of, you know, instead of DEI, it's now culture and love and whatever.
So we should do a study together because we're holding all those previous job titles. We have pre-captured that over the course of 7 years, years of annual payroll. So if somebody is still employed there and at a salary, we could look at their salary history. We could look at the morphing of their job title. That's an interesting study.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. If what you're suggesting is to give Derek more work to do, then I'm all for it.
Yeah,
that is, sounds. I'll just
we'll
give
ship
me
our
the,
data over to you and go. You can
just give
you
me
can slice it and dice it.
I'm gonna need it in a hard copy though.
I'll just take the talking points and make the op-ed out of it. But I did. You mentioned Sunshine Week, and that starts this week, right? And I'm sure not a whole lot of people know what Sunshine Week is. But it actually is kind of a coming together of kind of the left and the right. We always laugh about it around here because we, as the Conservative Texas Public Policy Foundation, partner with some of the most left-wing media in the state to promote transparency and accountability during Sunshine Week. We just got some poll results back. We do polling probably every 3 or 4 months here at TPPF. We just got some polling back and we asked people whether or not they trust the agencies to be transparent here in Texas. These are state agencies. And we got back some interesting results. 46% said that they had a lot or some trust, but 52% said that they had very little or none at all.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was only about 11% that they said that they had a lot, but about 28% that said they had no trust at all. Does that gel with your experience in terms of people trusting at least state agencies to be open and transparent with what they're doing with the money and that they'd say that they're doing what they said they were going to do with it? Or is that different than maybe other states?
So the Texas polling is actually pretty high on the issue of trust.
46%
pretty high.
Yeah. I actually thought it was pretty high too.
Yeah. Here's the numbers I have in my own head from national polling on the issue of corruption. When asked, the general public, when asked whether or not the federal government, when they spend a dollar of taxpayer money, 92% of the people say that corruption or misallocation of funds is involved in some capacity with the spending of a tax dollar. Mm-hmm. So your numbers that you just recited here in Texas, you guys must be doing something right.
Well, I mean, we generally have, you know, kind of a right track. I mean, it's about 50-55%. So people, especially with the economy, with, you know, all the people coming here, is always a good sign, just sort of generally that, like, Texas is moving in the right direction, whether people really study the numbers necessarily or not. The fact that we have 500,000 people moving here every year is kind of a sign to people that we're doing things the right way. But again, it's still underwater. I mean, you still have, right. it's only 46% say. So certainly they could be doing some things better. But speaking of Texas, and this is one thing I thought was really, really interesting. You know, the number 1, 2, and 3 issue here in Texas is the border. And you guys have done a lot of really good work with looking at how funding is spent to protect the border or what's happening with, like, the illegal populations that are coming over and how much money is being spent to manage that whole problem. Can you walk us through a little bit about what you know about what's going on at the border?
Yeah. I remember when in 2016, Donald Trump advocated the building of a wall, and the other side just went absolutely crazy that the top line estimates of $12 billion to build the wall or $15 billion to build the wall, that was too much money. We didn't have the money to build the wall. Well, according to our data at OpenTheBooks.com, through a sub-agency of Health and Human Services alone called the Office of Refugee Resettlement, we're on pace over the course of the Biden administration to spend about $45 billion on migrant aid. So it kind of makes Trump's border wall look like pocket change.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, there's conflicts of interest there. Not only is it expensive, not only did about 8 million undocumented migrants crash our border during the Biden administration years, but there's conflicts of interest at this Office of Refugee Resettlement, where Robin DunMarcos, she's the director, she actually comes out of the industry. So we're all of us at Texas Public Policy Foundation or OpenTheBooks.com, we're always asking the question, has the agency been captured by the outside industry? And it looks so in this case. Mm-hmm. So she, for 27 years, she comes out of the, she was employed in executive positions by International Rescue Committee and Church World Services, and they are two of the top five highest grant receivers since 2013 from the office that she now heads up. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, the funding for International Rescue Committee, while she's been there, is up on a year-over-year basis by about $100 million. Mm-hmm. Now, we reached out to comment for her, and the agency responded. They said she recuses herself from all decisions with her former employer for the first 2 years of her employment, which ends this August, and then she's not recused at all.
Mm. Well, good. Maybe we can get some answers out of that. But, Derek, I mean, you've got the media attacking Greg Abbott for what he's doing at the border through Operation Lone Star. I think the last number that I saw was spending $3 billion, which is $3 billion of taxpayer Texas money, right, to do the job that the federal government won't do. Right. $3 billion versus $45 billion. And what was the timeline for that $45 billion? Was it over the last 3 or 4 years?
That'll be over the 4 years of the Biden administration.
Right, so $3 billion, and the media's going nuts over, you know, how much money and saying it's a lost cause and we're wasting a bunch of money at the border, and yet here we have the Biden administration spending, you know, $45 billion, 15 times that amount, just to
And it's gonna be higher than that? That's just through one office. This office no one's even heard about, this sub-agency of Health and Human Services called the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Mm-hmm. So there's a myriad of other federal programs flowing through other federal agencies on this, including, you know, the costs of our men and women on the border that are supposed to be protecting the border.
Think we'll ever get to the bottom of that?
No, I don't think so. Well, yes, I do think so, but I think it'll come after an inflection point or a tipping point, usually electorally delivered.
Diplomatic.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not.
I like how you said that. It's not true.
It's not a cop out. I think because if you look at where the federal government is on any question, but I think immigration, the border specifically. You mentioned capture by industry. It's definitely captured by interest, and I think we've seen very similar things, across the regulatory apparatus of the federal government. I mean, the SEC jumps to mind really, really blatantly, and that's because, you know, a lot of people feel that in order to staff these people with experts, which you do want somebody that at least has some sort of technical expertise in that which they seek to regulate, they often have priors and invested interests within that particular sector. Mm-hmm. The director of that agency is one good example, but it's not the only example. Mm-hmm. And I think that people feel freaking out over the $3 billion, you know, versus the $45 billion. It's also because, you know, federal spending is, you'll be the first to say, you know, most people don't see that as funny money. You know, they don't necessarily track it because, you know, even though there's great resources out there like OpenTheBooks.com, most people just think that that's money that doesn't exist because there's no balanced budget amendment or anything like that. We don't have that ability in Texas. So the $3 billion, even as a percentage of spend, is going to be spent a lot more efficiently in Texas. Not to say that there isn't room for improvement, but you essentially just have a federal government that goes, oh, well, we're going to secure the border, or, you know, extensively, we're going to secure the border. We're going to make sure folks get handled appropriately. And then they go and fund everything that undermines it, which is about as on the nose federal government as possible.
Well, and here's something that nobody's talking about, or not enough conversation in the country has resulted from this set of facts. Over the course of the last 2 years alone, there's been 260,000 unaccompanied minors come across that border. This is a human health catastrophe. They end up getting sponsored out of this Office of Refugee Resettlement. And the office has lost track of 85,000 of those kids. There's a human trafficking operation right here in this country with these unaccompanied minors, with 85,000 kids lost in the system.
That's absolutely a crisis, and it's a crisis of Biden's making. That you know, I mean, we see them now trying to do something at the border and trying to, you know, pretend at least that they're moving policy or that they're changing back to the way things were before Biden. But the question is, why did it take so long? You know, 3 years they just let it go forever, and now all of a sudden it's a drag on his poll numbers, and now he's starting to react to that.
I think you just answered your own question.
But it's just an absolute crisis, and it's having these real world issues, not just, you know, obviously with the social and cultural issues, but as you said, $45 billion just in the last 3 years.
And there's another issue in play here. We just did a report at OpenTheBooks.com built off an official U.S. Treasury report. So, Brian, if I say it, you can doubt me. But if Janet Yellen signs the report as the Treasury Secretary, it has to be the truth.
I would doubt you even more. But yeah.
Medicare and Social Security are underfunded to the tune of $175.3 trillion.
Yeah.
Okay? So when it comes to the open border on the 8 million people that crashed it, nobody can tell you over the course of their lifetime if they're going to be a net cost to the system, mm-hmm. because the immigration system's in abject chaos, or if they're going to be a net benefit financially to the system. If they're a net cost to the system, we're really in a world of fiscal hurt. Mm-hmm. So we need a lot more people in this country that are smart, hardworking entrepreneurs that help us grow this economy, because mm-hmm. we have a lot of debt, $34 trillion worth of national debt and $175 trillion worth of unfunded liabilities on Medicare and Social
and
Security.
And these are two things that Milton Friedman put together 50 years ago, more than 50 mm-hmm. years ago, which is you can't have an open border and then have this open entitlement system. Right, because exactly what's happening is going to happen, as you point out, which is people coming in and saying, okay, well, now I'm going to, you know, retire on the public dime, or at least get health care on the public dime. And if you have an open border and you don't have a way to secure that, you get these problems. You said, I mean, $175 trillion, is that even a real number to most people? Like, how do you?
Well, here, let's put it in context. We have two really good examples that put that number in context. It was $105 trillion. Of every country, their gross domestic product on planet Earth last year. So $175 trillion, that's real money. If you take the spending since the foundation of the Republic, say 1789 when the Constitution, you inflate it by inflation till today, mm-hmm. it's just a little bit more than $175 trillion. So that's all the spending ever in the United States of America. It barely exceeds $175 trillion of unfunded liability just on two federal programs.
All right, well, let's bring it back down a little bit closer to Texas, a little bit closer to home. You know, again, we laugh on the show that, you know, we're contractually obligated to talk about school choice, but this is actually an issue that you know a lot about yeah. and that you have a lot of statistics on. And you know, I know a lot of people, I mean, it's a weird dynamic. People think, you know, that their local school is doing the right thing, and they know that their principals and their teachers are doing the right thing, and they feel close, you know, they're part of the community. And so in order to try and, you know, it's difficult sometimes to try and push for reforms, because you've got to kind of widen the lens a little bit and look at what's going on in our schools. And unfortunately, we do have some pretty scary statistics that, you know, and in Texas, I think it's as much as half, around at least for the last 10 years, about half of kids are not reading and doing math at grade level. You know, these are some of the numbers that you look into as well. What are you noticing either in Texas or trending nationwide in terms of how our schools are doing? And do you think that parents and reformers are looking at those kind of numbers, and that's what's kind of driving this push for school choice?
Well, I hope so. If you look at the nation's report card on Texas schools on eighth graders, 23% are actually reading at grade level, and 24% are doing math at grade level, you know, in the eighth grade, which begs the question, you know, if you had to grade Texas K through 12 public schools, what grade would they get? Well, I think you'd have to say they get an F. Mm-hmm. Now, the Texas administrative class in K through 12 schools, your superintendents, your assistant superintendents, they make a tremendous amount of money. They're some of the most highly compensated public employees in Texas and across the country. Texas teachers, for example, historically haven't made it to that level of compensation. However, you had the Texas state legislature on the last go around start to throw money into mm-hmm. the classroom for teachers. Look, if you're going to do that, if you're going to empower the teachers' unions, if you are going to pay teachers more, if you are going to continue to build out these massive bond referendums for school construction, then I think, and if the system isn't producing kids in eighth grade that read at grade level and do math at grade level, you have to introduce competition into the system. Mm-hmm. So, because the Texas taxpayer has made quite an investment and quite a commitment into the public school system, mm-hmm. they're quite evidently not doing the job. So I think you have to introduce that competition.
I mean, obviously, we talk a lot about school choice here. I mean, there's recent stats have come out. I think Reason has a new report that goes state by state. And in Texas, you've just seen the revenue numbers have jumped and jumped and jumped, and yet teacher pay has either gone down or essentially been stagnant. Where's all the money going?
Well, I mean, I couldn't think of a better example than some of the capital expenses. You know, we've talked on the show before about bond propositions, which I do want to point out in the spirit of today's show. tend to be largely bankrolled by, again, those who benefit, whether it's the construction companies or the architectural companies, or sometimes one and the same. This is the one who benefits from that. That's also why you're not seeing bonds that just cover instruction space. You know, I'm just thinking of the last couple bonds that we've seen in the area, you know, in the greater Austin area, whether it's Round Rock ISD, Pflugerville ISD, whatever the case might be, is you essentially see these massive capital expenditures, you know, with maybe some refitting and updating of actual, you know, school buildings. But then you see a natatorium, a performing arts center, which, don't get me wrong, you know, the arts and athletics do have a role within public education, I do believe. But that doesn't mean everybody gets the Globe Theater. It doesn't mean everybody gets an Olympic-sized swimming pool. However, the fact that we have these bond elections, we have them not in the general electoral cycle. They're very low turnout. They're motivated, you know, motivated voters. And these things will win with a couple hundred votes. And it turns out they'll be saddling the entire area with up to 30 years of tax liability for that one project alone, to say nothing about what's already been spent.
Yeah, on my sheet here, I've got some of the highest, you know, a ranking of some of the highest bond referendums in Texas history. And they're all recent. So you have the $3+ billion bond referendum down in the Dallas area. Yep. You've got Austin right here in the state capitol. It's the second highest ever. It was $2.4 billion on a bond referendum. But that was just exceeded out in Prosper on the last election cycle. I think they did $2.8 billion on their bond referendum.
These football stadiums aren't going to pay for themselves.
Well, it was a massive football stadium and a massive investment into that Prosper stadium. So you have that unholy alliance that is stopping school choice. There's 1 million students in the K-12 system in Texas that are in a failing public school. So it's a moral outrage that you have these construction contractors partnering with the teachers' unions to stop school choice and competitive systems within the Texas K-12 public schools.
And the left, especially the anti-choice folks, have really painted themselves into a corner here, because they are the ones that are equating all the, you know, more spending, more money into the education system with better results. They're the ones who are saying, you know, yes, we understand there's a problem, but that's because you haven't, you know, given enough money, or Texas by, you know, by comparison is at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to how much we spend per student. And there's all of these, you know, the statistics that they hide and so on and so forth. But again, going back to a little bit to the reason study, you know, there have been fluctuations in terms of spending increases and decreases over the last few decades, but you just see the NAEP scores just either flatline or, I mean, literally whether we spend a lot of money or we spend a little money, they have absolutely no correlation to the actual quality of the education. And what we talk a lot about here at TPPF is not, you know, as much as we would like to get into, you know, choice is really the be-all, end-all solution. It kind of is, but what we talk about at the beginning is parents want to know what's going on in the classrooms. They want accountability for the quality of the education. They want transparency into knowing what's going on in there. And of course, the pandemic opened a lot of windows for parents to finally see what was going on into the classrooms, which they didn't like. And so now you've got all kinds of other controversies with the wrong materials in classroom or not teaching academics at all. So you've got kind of all of this pushing. And I think, you know, Open the Books does is it just adds to that, and it says, look, in addition to all the quality of education issues that we have, we're spending all of this money, spending so much money on this. And what I love about it is that what's gotten the parental movement is information. You know, once they saw what was going on in the classrooms, I feel like that's really started this push. I feel like your website is probably underutilized by this new class of parental empowerment activists. Maybe they should be going and looking up their, you know, their classrooms and particularly their superintendents, and seeing how much money they're making, and then using that data to go in front of them and say, what's going on here? How come we're not seeing better results?
Yeah, 100%. And we have nearly every dime taxed and spent for Texas K-12 public schools on our website, so you can follow every dime of it. Mm-hmm. There's one transparency area, since it is Sunshine Week in the K-12 public schools and across the entire government complex in Texas, that needs transparency, and that is when a public employee retires, their retirement annuity payout, their pension payout for their lifetime, is not subject to your Freedom of Information Act law, your Sunshine Law. So, for instance, like in Illinois or in New York, in California, for Oregon, for crying out loud, you know, these are union strongholds. we can file the money once people retire. And it's only fair. Taxpayers are actually helping fund those pensions. We guarantee those pensions. We get to see them, mm-hmm. but not in Texas. So that needs to be changed in the Texas statutes.
There's a new new Liberty Action agenda item for us. You need to submit.
Yet more work we're getting delivered.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's do it. And this is why it's important. I mean, how many double and triple dippers are in the school system?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've got people probably making $500,000-$600,000 a year. They may be retired from one pension system, hired in a different one. Mm-hmm. We have no idea without being able to see that flow of funds.
And now you do a segment almost nearly every week here at a TV station, KI, the CBS affiliate here in Austin. And so is Austin an unfortunate hotbed of lack of transparency? So that you're coming on every week and exposing new stories?
So they actually are pretty good on the transparency angle. And that gets back to what Derek said earlier, that Texas has a natural bent toward providing the information. And so does the city of Austin. Now, that being said, it is, once you look at the data, once you look at the information, it is the gift that keeps on giving. So, for instance, when at the peak of the ice storm, when the power was out for hundreds of thousands of residents, we were holding the city of Austin checkbook. So I immediately looked at the amount of money every year spent on tree trimming. And they had two vendors, they were doing about 12 to 13 million a year on tree trimming. But obviously, they were grossly behind schedule. And this year, they did $50 million on tree trimming. They're not even going to be caught up till 2028, which shows you how far behind they were on trimming trees. So when that ice storm hit and the limbs came down and took down the power lines, this was the result of misallocation of resources, on tree trimming.
Man, and I absolutely remember that story and didn't realize that a lot of that data had come from you guys, because that was it, right? I mean, as much as the left wanted to say, oh, this is the grid, and they wanted to blame Greg Abbott and the state legislature, it turns out it was just
tree trimming in Austin.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
They were
behind schedule. I want to get your take on this, because, so we've been pushing for local and state efficiency audits, right? And it's different than an audit. An audit is just like, did you spend the money and did it go where you thought, where you told it to go? And then they stop there. If you spend a bunch of money and it's like, oh, this is for a homeless program, and then the program that, works on homelessness got the money, that's it. That's all they talk about. That, they don't go any further to make sure that the money actually was used and that, it was done well. But efficiency audits are different, because you would go in and say, did you start to solve the problem with the money that you spent? Mm-hmm. And so at least philosophically, or at a 30,000-foot level, it always really sounds like a good idea, and it's something that we've pushed before. Have you seen efficiency audits work, or is it really smoke and mirrors when addressing?
So I'm based in Illinois. It's the Super Bowl of corruption. So, in Illinois—
You pass out rings every year, too, and have parades for corruption?
If anything, in Illinois, if anything happens for the good of the people on public policy and politics, it's entirely by accident. So there's no efficiency in Illinois government. We believe in forensic auditing, deep evidentiary, follow the money, hold up in court, put them in jail. Yeah, I mean, think about it. Yeah. That's how you got Al Capone back in the day. So Texas is probably much better run than Illinois, so I can see where you could have an efficiency audit. Mm-hmm. I think the main audit, the public sector auditing, mm-hmm. is broken, completely broken. You've got hundreds of millions and billions of dollars at the local, state, and federal level subject to auditing, and nothing's ever corrected. They don't, nobody's ever caught with their hand in the cookie jar. It's, in Illinois, in the small town of Dixon, the city treasurer stole $62 million, and the audits never caught her.
Oh my gosh. Well, Derek's originally from Ohio. How are they doing up there?
In Ohio?
Yeah. That's right next door.
Well, Cuyahoga County, the Cuyahoga County Community College president cleaned off $1 million in that poor area.
I can actually do one better. I'm from the Toledo area, which the city council it just rotates through. I mean, I think, Rod Blagojevich would make a good councilman in Toledo, perhaps. But hey, it's just good to hear Chicago getting back to a Super Bowl.
Well, listen, we have a couple minutes left, so I mean, that's an amazing story. Do you have like the greatest hits, the top 10 worst? I mean, because you're saying that you guys go get the checkbooks, but it's not like you sit down with the government employees and they tell you where all the, you know, the dimes are located and all that. You have forensic auditors, you have accountants and lawyers that have to go through all of this stuff.
Yep, we file the money.
Yeah, do y'all have like a top 5 or a top 10 of like the worst things that you've found since
you've
been
going?
Here's
the very worst thing we ever found. Well, I mean, we'll go through a couple of these, but who knew that you could be an LA County lifeguard and make up to $510,000 a year? So we put Baywatch on Paywatch.
I love it.
I was like, David Hasselhoff was right. Yeah. My goodness.
So we found 98 of them made more than $200,000. 20 of them made more than $300,000. The top paid lifeguard made $510,000.
And what sort of setup got them there?
A public sector union.
What's the racket?
Well, it was two things. They have a public sector union that's maxing out American exceptionalism on behalf of their lifeguards.
I guess so.
And the other thing was the American Rescue Act plan. So that provided $2 billion for Los Angeles County on a COVID bailout. Lifeguards are classified as first responders, and so they got a massive contract largesse. We actually found one lifeguard in a 6-year period made $1 million in overtime alone. The top 5 lifeguards, it's not only about the cash compensation or their pension 30 years and out on 80% of your cash compensation. So a lot of these guys are getting out at age 50 and they've got 80% of their pay for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. But the top 5 most highly compensated LA County lifeguards also, they got a take-home vehicle, which was a Toyota Sequoia truck.
The yellow one, if I recall.
Oh, gosh. That's insane. Do we even have lifeguards at the beach in Texas? I don't even remember seeing any.
It's survival of the fittest down there, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we're strong here. But that's insane. That's a lot of happening. So there wasn't like some sort of like mafia racket where they were funneling the money through the lifeguard, through the lifeguards, and they were getting, it really was lifeguards making $500,000. That's insane.
It's insane.
That's crazy.
And they can do it on our money. We helped fund that. You and I, through the American Rescue Act plan, helped fund a $2 billion COVID bailout of that county.
So you mentioned COVID, which they, you know, there were a lot of, I think the federal government actually did a lot of trying to, root out the fraud and all of that. Did y'all participate in any of that and look at any of the COVID funding that went out and try and expose some of the crazy? Because that was just billions and billions of dollars that was just flowing to whoever was like, oh, I'm a small business. And you realize that, it's some company with like 600, locations around the country, and really they're not. All of these crazy stories that were coming out. Did y'all look at any of that and help out in any way?
Yeah, nearly every single federal program was either illegally or legally looted during the 3 years of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I mean, just take, for instance, the Paycheck Protection Program loans that were turned into grants, the PPP funding. They were supposed to go to mom and pop businesses on Main Street, those men and women whose businesses were closed down during the economic lockdowns.
Right.
And what we found is we took a look at the top 300 largest law firms and accounting firms in the country. And 126 of the top 300 largest law firms took $800 million worth of forgiven PPP funding, and 140 out of, I think 160 out of the top 300 largest accounting firms took $400 million worth of forgiven PPP loan. So, I mean, we were sold out by our elites.
Yeah, absolutely. And the really tragic thing about all of that is that all of that spending, all of that money they flooded with to the American economy is what caused all of the inflation, or a lot of the inflation that is that the real mom and pops, at the kitchen table right now are having to pay at the grocery store, at the fuel pump or whatever. I mean, and I guess ironically, it's a lot of what is sinking Biden's electoral chances now, because people just don't feel like the economy is getting back into shape because of inflation.
Despite what Paul Krugman says.
Despite what all the lefty economists say.
So we were one of the first to call that the total pandemic fraud from con artists, criminals, and crime syndicates from around the world would exceed $400 billion. And now that number is in play.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Adam, this has been a real joy. We're glad we had the opportunity to have you in town, despite you know, not being here for South by Southwest. Hopefully, you get in and get out because the traffic is much worse. But Adam Andrzejewski is the CEO and the founder of OpenTheBooks.com, and so we would encourage all of our listeners and all of our viewers to go and check that out and dig through. How user friendly is it? Is it? I mean, it's got to be a bunch of spreadsheets and stuff. And I'm a comms guy, so I don't do math. And like, is it pretty user-friendly for people to kind of poke around and find what they need?
Yeah, we've made it simple. So remember on the family vacation, when you loaded up the station wagon, you used to play 20 questions. Mm-hmm. We've got it down to 3 questions. So it's called Benjamin the Chatbot. We use the latest in artificial intelligence technologies.
Nice.
And you answer 3 simple questions and right to your email box, you'll get your answer on whatever you're looking for. So if your neighbor has a farm and you want to know how much they receive in federal farm subsidies, or like I say, the salary of the teacher who teaches your fifth grader, mm-hmm. or, you know, if you want to look up Biden's White House payroll, like if you just follow the questions in the chat bot right from our homepage, you'll get your answer.
And there's, you know, and it's just the data, right? So people can make their own ideas about whether or not that's worth it or whether it's not worth it. It's not like you're pushing any kind of necessary agenda. It's just the agenda is transparency. The agenda is accountability, those kinds of things.
Yeah, all facts, no spin, no adjectives, no political press secretary to tell you how to think. You'll see what the government has disclosed to us in terms of how they spent your money.
Well, what a resource, what a benefit for the public. And if you're not using it, hopefully some of our viewers and listeners will go and check it out today and find out, you know, maybe Texas is doing the right thing. You never know. Maybe you don't find as much. I'm sure that we'll find some waste somewhere in there, particularly at the local level. But and maybe just for fun, go and check out some lifeguards, you know, around the country, maybe how the Florida lifeguards compare to the California lifeguards.
We have some maps on the site. So when in the red state, blue state debate last fall, when it was Governor Gavin Newsom in California and Ron DeSantis in Florida, and DeSantis holds up the San Francisco map of the human waste in the public way, the San Francisco poop map.
That was
our map. You can surf that map right from openthebooks.com.
I think, unfortunately, that map is ingrained into a lot of people's brains, unfortunately. So thank you for that. Thank you so much, Adam, for being on the show. We really appreciate you having being here. And as always, as we like to say, in the words of Sam Houston, do good and risk the consequences. And we'll see you next time.